packed with B vitamins. These were essential for detoxifying my body of excess bad estrogen, estriol, which I knew to stimulate cancer growth. He also recommended I take the B vitamin and niacin, even though it gave me an odd flush for a few minutes. This happens to most people who take it. It is totally normal and does not suggest toxicity. I now believe niacin should be part of most cancer protocols. It helps starve cancer by reducing fat. I was now taking supplements I hoped would target and block different cancer pathways and growth factors, angles ignored by conventional medicine. I was soon on a first-name basis with the owners of my local health food store. I'm quite sure I single-handedly kept them in business. All further receipts went promptly into the bin, out of Andrew's sight. At first, I found it hard to believe that potentially useful treatments were forced into obscurity. Yet the more I researched, the clearer it became that many studies were biased, that data was often hidden, and that methodology was frequently twisted to confuse the results. As my knowledge grew, so did my realization that cancer was first and foremost a business. Anything that didn't have a patent was belittled by the industry, particularly by some of the big cancer charities. Survival with alternative approaches seemed to be littered with failures, but then so were conventional ones. I guess this may have been partly because patients often started to look for complementary therapies too late. Generally, the longer cancer is present, the harder it becomes to treat. So I kept an open mind. I noted that people tended to throw their faith behind just one modality. Nowadays, people are not only terrified by chemotherapy, with more patients refusing it than ever before, but there seems to be an obsession with cannabis oil, regardless of the strength of the THC or CBD content. I see many patients using cannabis, DCA, or the ketogenic diet to the exclusion of anything else. It seemed obvious to me that combining approaches was far more effective. But combining treatments requires a huge dollop of courage. What will the interaction be? Is it safe? Targeting different cancer pathways at the same time was surely the way forward, but a patient needs the guidance of a qualified doctor experienced in nutritional and medical interventions. The growth in numbers of functional medicine practitioners is a relief to all cancer patients. However, most people cannot afford this kind of help, and with a shortage of integrative oncologists, many go it alone on a wish and a prayer. The first rule in war is to know thy enemy. This rule underpinned everything I did. I had to put fear of the unknown aside. This was no time for feek and weebleness, as my sister used to say when I was feeling drained. She was right. A lot of it was in my head. Stay strong, stay positive, and never give up looking for answers. I was convinced they were out there, even if neither the conventional nor the complementary side had the complete answer. What else had I missed that neither side were using? A hallmark of cancer is that a patient's white blood cells fail to recognize their own cancer as the enemy. Cancer seems to switch them off. They needed to be woken up again. Might it be possible to reactivate the immune system in some way? If each treatment I discovered weakened and switched off a different part of cancer's armor, adding them all together might eventually allow my immune system a chance to gain the upper hand. Could it then deliver the final punch? Still unsure about chemotherapy, I came across a new option called insulin-potentiated chemotherapy. The insulin made the cancer cells more permeable to chemo, so you didn't need as much. It was reportedly getting a lot of success. Still, I didn't like the thought of all that extra insulin. It might make the cell more permeable to glucose, too. I decided to put it on the back burner in the event that everything else failed. Andrew and I sat down and had a chat about how we should handle the problem of having so many options and no clear roadmap. "The only way is to approach it scientifically," I said. "We need to know how all these different options actually affect my cancer. I'm getting blood markers taken now. Maybe they'll show what's working and what isn't. Andrew set up an Excel spreadsheet, and we began plotting my blood antigen marker levels on a chart. Although there was likely to be a bit of variation, I might be able to spot a trend when I began a new line of treatment. I wanted to approach it with my decisions based on evidence, not guesswork, even though I knew I could be making mistakes. I was aware it could all go horribly wrong and time could run out before I discovered anything. Hunting for reliable advice on the internet is as confusing as trying to sail in thick fog, and potentially as dangerous. I came up against conflicting and alarming advice, especially about the use of supplements, vitamins, and juicing. Trying to extrapolate and dissect out the truth can be difficult. For this reason, Dr. Google can be your foe. Half an hour on Cancer Research UK, the aim of which is to reduce the number of deaths from cancer, has a strategy to get more patients into trials. It's Big Pharma thinly disguised. Or on Wikipedia, founder Jimmy Wales has long been a staunch critic of alternative and complementary therapies. We'll have you running a mile from anything unconventional. Pharmaceutical companies do not want you to try anything other than their unholy trinity of chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and surgery, or the latest targeted drugs and immunotherapies. I had to dig deeper, much, much deeper. Big Pharma would rather you didn't know about a natural substance until they'd worked out a way of copying the beneficial effects with a lucrative patent and drug. At the time of writing, if you look up disproven cancer treatments on Wikipedia, you can see two major cancer charities in action. Quick, before they change it. One of these charities has tried for years to patent a synthetic formulation of resveratrol while denying that this supplement is of any help despite easy-to-find research that proves just how useful it is. The same with hydroxycitrate, a supplement that mimics fasting and improves the effectiveness of chemotherapy. The same charity is happy to tell you that a diet or short-term fasting is dangerous, despite burgeoning evidence to the contrary. What about stage 4 terminal cancer? Isn't that more dangerous? The advice is not to try any diet or supplement until there's a nice patented drug available. Debate and contention was just as evident in 1999 as it is today. Back then, research did not fall into my lap at the touch of a button. No Facebook, no support groups, no internet chat rooms, no list of resources from helpful charities like yestolife.org.uk. All I had were journals, books, and medical sites like PubMed and Medline. Only a couple of weeks after my diagnosis and intense research, I was brimming with new knowledge and ready to take a much-needed break. We flew off for a few days' belated honeymoon in Mallorca, soaking up some essential vitamin D, taking the rest of my supplements with me in their ziplocked sachets. I was quite sure I was going to be stopped at security and forced to explain why I was carrying this suspicious-looking stash. Andrew had booked us into the honeymoon suite of a 4-star hotel. Our room opened out onto a private pool. We were greeted by rose petals strewn over the bed in the shape of a heart. It was a relaxed, soothing atmosphere. The husband had done well. Tick. It was just what I needed. For 5 days, I meditated and swam every day, went on long scenic walks, and ate a healthy, low-carbohydrate Mediterranean diet, doused with lots of extra virgin olive oil. It was heaven. This was a pre-surgery strategy I can highly recommend to anyone who can afford it. Having surmised I was not about to drop dead from the tumor, that it wasn't pushing on vital arteries or any other life-threatening structures, I took my time to make sure I was in a fit state for the operation, mentally and physically. I knew what treatment traumas lay ahead. Delaying my surgery was a decision I will never regret. The knee-jerk reaction of almost every cancer patient is to want to remove a tumor as soon as humanly possible. The thought that they're harboring a parasitic alien creature in their bodies means they can't book themselves in for surgery fast enough. Panic influences far too many early decisions, and patients often feel bullied into early operations. Having evaluated the dangers of my situation, I decided I needed time to allow the aspirin, my radical diet, and the supplements to get to work. I was not going to be rushed. Surgery replicates the inflammatory process of mass apoptosis and subsequent fibrinogen, scar tissue production, and this suppresses important T cells and natural killer cells, exactly the ones your body needs to knock out the cancer. It triggers an inflammatory reaction in the body. One reason I felt non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin were so important. Tackling the problem of post-surgical metastatic spread is an area still ignored by mainstream medics, despite its huge potential for massive improvement in survival outcomes at little cost or toxicity. Science has revealed that my decision to take aspirin perioperatively was correct. Anti-inflammatory drugs used for 2 or 3 weeks before surgery and then for up to a year after have been shown to massively improve survival statistics. Around 90% of cancers are not immediately deadly, but cause death by metastasizing. Cancer patients regularly live with large tumors, so it was stopping further metastases that was important. Low-dose aspirin, 75 milligrams, prevents metastasis by about 20%. Greater gains can be made in some inflammatory cancers with short-term stronger NSAIDs, up to 70%. Instant improvements in survival by these simple interventions continue to be overlooked by surgeons, who pride themselves that good surgery is the main reason that cancer patients survive. They could vastly improve statistics if they would only add an anti-inflammatory before and after their excellent surgical skills. I knew my natural defenses needed to be at their highest during surgery. Why give my already stressed body all that extra work? After the negativity of my surgeon, I still had my worries about gastric bleeding, so I asked my GP his thoughts. He was a little more encouraging.
Lots of people take low-dose aspirin to prevent heart attacks and strokes, so it should be okay, he said after a little thought.
Would taking an antacid help protect my stomach? I asked.
I'm not sure about that. We don't like to suggest taking more than one drug at a time, and I don't know what effect it would have on your cancer, so best not, he added.
If only I had discovered cimetidine or Tagamet at this time. This was in widespread clinical use for gastric ulcers and the first antacid on the market. It used to be freely available over the counter in the UK and has since been shown to have enormous potential attacking cancer through multiple pathways. Long-term use of antacids has been linked to gastric cancer, though, but a short-term hit could have been a great help. When I discovered cimetidine in 2007, many years later, I took it for 3 months for its immune-boosting effects, and I still occasionally take it. Cimetidine, I realize now, would have also helped protect my stomach from the aspirin and may even have provided a bigger anti-cancer punch if I'd taken them together. The downside is that this antihistamine inhibits a detoxifying liver enzyme, cytochrome P450, meaning it increases the dosage of any other drug you may be taking. But this could be used in a beneficial way too, increasing either the plasma level of a drug or delaying clearance to maintain the anti-cancer effects in the body. One of its potential uses may be post-operatively. If you are a patient recovering from surgery, there is a critical period of 7 days when you experience a surge of T suppressor cells. These subdue levels of white cells called tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, TILs, which are the good guys that fight your tumor cells. Suppression of these allies is one reason cancer may flourish after surgery in the inflamed environment. The effects becoming visible.